You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hey, you're listening to A Face for Radio on CITR. Hey, you're listening to A Face for Radio on CITR. Right, a couple more. Hey, you're listening to A Face for Radio on CITR. Wait, should I do one more that's more varied? Hey, you're listening to A Face for Radio on CITR. Hey, you're listening... Oh, wait, ready?
Yeah.
Hey, you're... Okay. All right, I'm going to start in 3, 2, 1. Hey, you're listening to
December 2016,
Radio
January
on
2017 issue of Discorder Magazine is out now. Now. We managed to record CITR Student Executive President Shay McConkie's first glimpse at the new issue.
Whoa! That's funny.
Open one up yourself to read interviews with Walgren, poet Adele Barclay, Jakin, Kim Wardle, Dad Thighs, and A Guide for Playing Shows in America, amongst other goodies. Plus, live show reviews of The Body, Hannah Epperson, and album reviews of Monomyth, Daniel Terrence Robertson, and more. Thanks to this issue's advertisers, whom we love dearly, Live Van, Geist, Steam Whistle, The Rickshaw Theater, Timber Concerts, The Rio Theater, Mint Records, Nightwood Editions, Audiopile Records, The Astoria Vinyl Records, The Wise Hall, and Jazz Records. Grab a copy around town or read the issue online at discorder.ca. Maybe our best issue ever.
Most likely. I would say like high chance of best edition ever.
Dance Horizons provides affordable classes and encourage students to get involved with the community to develop as dancers.
Our classes are open to all skill levels, with styles ranging from hip-hop to ballet, and are taught by professional instructors.
We're running some exciting events in the next week.
Our dancers will be visiting Harbor Dance Center and are putting on a show on campus on December 3rd. If you want to see us dance to this song, visit UBC Dance Horizons on YouTube.
All right, hello, you heard it. This is A Face for Radio. I'm your host, Eric Coates. Pleasure to be here. Beautiful winter day in Vancouver. I hope you're all doing well. Today we have a interview with Ernesto Cervini, who is a jazz drummer and band leader based in Toronto. He is currently touring with his band Turboprop. That is, they're touring to promote their album Turboprop of the same name, and they'll be playing at Frankie's tomorrow. Before we get to that interview, I thought, hey, why don't we listen to a song by Turboprop so we get an idea of what we have in store. So this song is called De Molen by Turboprop. Enjoy. Thank you. All right, that was Turboprop with the song De Molen. So that is Ernesto Cervini's group, Turboprop, who will be playing at Frankie's on Friday. And we're about to listen to the interview that I did yesterday with Ernesto while he was out in Fernie. So that's coming up right now. After that, I'll give you some details on where the show will be and some music that's, well, a little different than what we've just listened to. Enjoy. Hello, you are listening to A Face for Radio. This is your host, Eric Coates. And today on the show, via a telephone based in Fernie, I have jazz drummer and composer Ernesto Cervini, who is here for an interview. How's it going, Ernesto?
I'm great, thank you.
All right, so you're on tour right now. How's the tour going?
It's been great. It's been a wonderful tour. We started off in Toronto on Wednesday, and then we performed on Friday in Edmonton, and Saturday, Sunday in Saskatoon, and then Monday back in Calgary, and now tonight we're in Fernie.
Jeez, that is a lot of driving.
It's been pretty... I mean, we didn't drive from Toronto to Calgary. That was... or from Toronto to Edmonton, we flew. But we've driven... Once we got to Calgary, then we drove everywhere.
Wow. And in the winter, too. That's impressive.
Yeah, we've been lucky that the weather's been actually really decent. We haven't had any drives that were too scary.
Okay, that's good. That's good to hear. I'm glad. But before I ask you a bit more in depth about the tour, you're from Toronto, correct?
Yep.
Based in the six, as they say.
Well, yes, exactly.
And I was just wondering, what's the jazz scene like in Toronto, and what the scenes are in the places that you've visited so far in the tour, just some comparison.
Sure.
Compare and contrast.
I mean, Toronto has a great... I think Toronto has a really great, vibrant jazz scene. There's a lot of really fantastic world-class musicians that live in and around Toronto. There's a couple of great schools. So there's young musicians that are just coming up all the time that can really play. And Toronto has the same problem as most cities do, with there just aren't enough venues there's like just a ton of great musicians, but there's really two jazz clubs that are playing that have music every night. So it can be tough with that many musicians, but that's okay. That's why it's nice to be able to come across Canada and perform in other cities that you don't get to play all the time. And I can say, in terms of the actual scene in every city, it's hard to know just from the little time I've spent there. I mean, there's great jazz clubs all across this country. And like Edmonton has the Yardbird Suite, and it's run by a wonderful the Edmonton Jazz Society. And I know Vancouver has Frankie's, and that's from the Coastal Jazz Society. So all these wonderful jazz societies that really support the music and really enable Canadian artists and international artists to, travel across the country and play,
Totally.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's true, because I think... I mean, I don't know the jazz world that well, but it seems like there's a lot, just sort of worldwide, different sort of little venues or jazz societies that promote the music, so that you have a lot of people that can tour a lot without necessarily having to be, huge names, where in sort of like, I guess, rock and pop music, to be able to tour at the same level, it seems like you need to be, a bit more established.
Sure, yeah, I can see that. I mean, I've done some.
I mean, outside of underground venues. Sorry.
Right. Yeah. I've done some touring in Europe as well, and it's kind of the same. You know, it's everywhere is a little different, but there's, you know, jazz societies there doing this, you know, the same thing, just as you said. So, it's wonderful. There's a lot of support. And I mean, the crowds they're okay. Like, I feel like every time I go across Canada, it gets a little more challenging to get people to come out.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, you know, yesterday in Banff, I mean, we didn't play last night in Banff, but it was minus 27.
Whew.
So, you know, if I didn't have to leave my house, there's no way I would have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, yeah, it's tough.
I get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been really great, and there's been some really good support, and I feel like in Canada we're really lucky to have such a wonderful network, and also, you know, we're doing this tour with the help of the Canada Council,
helped
to fund this tour. So
that's good.
You know, without some funding, I wouldn't be able to bring six people across Canada.
Yeah,
it's a big country. You know,
it's
you know, so that's been great as well. Having the support like that has been incredible.
Okay, well, that's good. I've interviewed a few other people who play jazz music, and I've noticed whenever I go to jazz shows, more so than when I go to other genres of music, that there's sort of a multi-generational aspect in both the performers and the audience. Is this just me, or do you notice this, and what do you think that effect has on the music from your perspective as a musician?
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. There is, I mean, I can say in my band, the age range, I mean, it's not that big, but it's 14 years.
Okay.
Between the oldest and the youngest, and me being the youngest, and I think, wait, is that right? Hold on. So yeah, 13 years. I know, like, in Toronto, I've played with guys who are, I think the first tour I ever did, I was 25, 26, and I was touring with an 80-year-old piano player and a 60-year-old
bass
player. But I mean, it doesn't, like, you know, age doesn't mean anything in jazz, because you're all studying kind of the same art form. And yeah, you know, I'm coming from it. I'm approaching it, I mean, from a slightly, probably more modern point of view, because, you know, compared to an 80-year-old who was around in the 40s and 50s, and
yeah.
I was not then, you know, I wasn't born until the 80s. So, you know, I don't have all the historical reference that he would have, but that makes it even more amazing for me to be able to perform with someone like that.
Totally.
And I think it's cool for him to be able to perform with someone young and exuberant and excited like me. So I feel like in this music, it's really great. I mean, as the young person in that situation, it's great to be able to learn from your elders and like, just get all the information you can from them, and because they've lived it. Like, the piano player that I was touring with, his name is Gene DeNovi, and he used to play with Benny Goodman and played with Sarah Vaughan, and he played with, like,
wow,
these, you know, famous jazz musicians,
yeah,
that I admire, and so you just want to sit there and talk to him and let him tell you stories about what it was like in the, you know, 50s.
Yeah.
So I think it's really great for both sides. You know?
Yeah, totally. And how did you decide to get into jazz yourself?
I have two older sisters, and they were both studying music. I mean, all three of us studied music as kids. And my oldest sister, her name is Amy Cervini. She's now a jazz vocalist in New York City. But at the time, she was studying jazz saxophone. And I remember hearing her practice, and I loved it. I thought it sounded so cool. Having you know, studied classical music, then hearing that, it was just like, it was so neat.
Yeah.
And then as a drummer, I started out learning Led Zeppelin tunes and like getting all that stuff together, and
yeah.
And then I joined a youth big band, and so I was playing in this big band with a bunch of other kids, and we were playing, you know, easy big band charts. And I don't know. I just loved it. I think I loved the... I mean, playing drums in a big band is really fun because you have a lot of control. And it's a really important spot.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it. And I'm one of those lucky people, I think, that from an early age I kind of knew that this is what I wanted to do. I just kind of went for it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's been good.
Awesome. Well, I guess I want to ask you a bit about the record. So the record is called Turboprop, and all the members of the Ernesto Cervini Quartet plus two more people, correct? How'd the record come about? What was the recording like? And what's it been like playing with the added members?
Well, the record came about. I mean, I did three albums with the quartet.
Yeah.
My quartet. And then I wanted to do something a little different. And so I was brainstorming all these ideas. And then I decided I wanted to add William, Karn, and Tara Davidson to the band specifically. I knew I wanted them.
And what instruments do they play? Just so,
Tara
so you know.
Plays alto saxophone, okay. And William Karn plays trombone.
Great.
And then I already had Joel Fromm on tenor saxophone, and then rhythm section, I'm on drums, Dan Loomis on bass, and Adrian Perugia on piano. And So I wanted to add two more voices just so I could have a little more room to arrange. You know, once you have three horns, you can really do a lot of arranging and composing for the band. And I just wanted to give it a try. So I asked them if they would be in the band, and then I booked a bunch of gigs just to try out material. Mm-hmm. And it went really well. And then we recorded our first album after we did our first tour. And that's the last time... Oh, no, we've been out. The band, this is our third tour with the band.
Okay.
The first tour... we played all this music, and then we, much like this tour, we finished the tour, went straight into the recording studio, and recorded everything.
Okay.
And it was, I mean, you know, coming off the road, it's always great to go right into the studio from being on the road, because all the music's really tight.
Yeah.
And everyone's relaxed because they've played it so much. So there's, you know, you're not really reading anymore. You're just playing and listening. And so the recording went really well. We were really happy with it. And now we're playing a whole book of new music that we're gonna record next week, and really excited about. Yeah.
Jeez, that's great.
So
quick turnaround.
And then the new album will probably come out. We're in December, right? It'll probably come out sometime in the fall of next year.
Okay.
Once I record it, it'll probably take another almost year to, like, mix it, master it, and then release it.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
Awesome. And what were some of the, I just guess, you know, what's the new type of sound, I guess, that you were going for with Turboprop?
In general?
Yeah.
Or,
On this last album, I read that you play, just on the Bandcamp page, it says, you know, some original compositions, some, I think, Charlie Parker, some Radiohead, so it's a bit,
it's a little
diverse.
Bit all over the map.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same. It's more of that. I mean, we didn't record the Radiohead tune, so we're going to record that on this album.
Okay, what song?
The Daily Mail. Do you know that one? It's one of their... They never recorded it.
No, I don't.
But it's on... You know, they have those live recordings that they do in the basement.
Okay.
Have you ever seen those? Where they'll do, like, all the music from In Rainbows, but live.
Oh, that's cool.
So, So we're going to do that. Yeah, so that's the Daily Mail. And then we also do a song by Blind Melon.
Really?
Yeah. And then what else is weird on this one? I think those are the two covers. And then we're doing a couple standards and then a bunch of originals. So it's kind of more of the same.
Yeah.
Just a really, you know, wide array of different, you know, inspirations.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I mean, it keeps it kind of fresh and fun, too, for, like, the listener. It's nice to go to a show, and, you know, even if you're not a huge, avid jazz fan, you can sit there and go, oh, wait a minute, this is Blind Melon. I know this tune. I used to listen to this, you know, when I was a kid, which is why we're doing it, because I used to listen to it when I was a kid, and I really liked it.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
So, yeah, so it's I feel like it's fun to, you know, play kind of whatever I want in this band.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some of it's jazz and some of it's not. But once we play it in a, you know, in a jazz setting, but it's, some of it's just whatever music I like.
No, that's great. I also wanted to ask about Art Blakey. Just because he's someone that I really like and came upon sort of completely by chance. And at least just a little bit what I've read about you, what I've found sort of on your website and on the Bandcamp page, it says, you know, little references to him and you play some of his music. So is he a big inspiration for you?
I think so. I mean, it's hard, you know, it's hard to not be inspired by him. He was so great.
Yeah.
And he was such a great band leader, and he did such a good job of putting together a band that would feature all of the members of the band.
Mm-hmm.
And playing this, again, I mean, they also played a wide array of different types of music. It was all jazz, but it was, you know, coming from different places, and all the different band members composed for the band.
Yeah,
and I just loved that idea of having a band that's, you know, it was Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, but it was like, it was more of a collective than it was just his thing.
Yeah, yeah.
He totally made it so that it was everyone's thing, and I really wanted the same thing with this band. That's why it's the band is called Turboprop. It's not like my name's not really in it.
Yeah,
you know, because it's my band, but it's a band, and I want everyone to feel ownership of it in some way, and I think that's what he did, and I think that's why his band sounded so great.
That's interesting. So that sort of leads into a question that I like to ask jazz musicians in particular. What's the different approach that you take when you're band leader as opposed to a sideman? And also, this just came to me right now. Comes from a complete place of ignorance. Is there any difference when the band leader with band leaders based on their instrument that they're playing? If that makes sense. So like a drummer leading the band as opposed
to. Well, I'll answer that first, maybe.
Okay.
Or, yeah, I'll try and answer both. I might need you to remind me what they were. But I'll
no go problem.
With is there a difference between the instruments? I think it depends. You know, as a band leader, I try not to, how can I put this? I try and feature everyone the same. So to be, you know, we'll do a set where, like, there'll be one drum solo. So I'm not trying to, like, I'm the band leader, but I don't feel like the music needs to sound like I'm the band leader. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm not, like, I don't want every song to feature the drums, because that's going to get really boring really fast,
mm-hmm.
you know? And no one needs to hear a drum solo in every song. So in terms of the actual music itself, I mean, I get to pick it. For the most part, although I encourage everybody else to write for the band, and if anyone ever said, hey, I think we should do this song, well, great, let's do it.
Yeah.
But in general, I'm the one who picks it, and I'm the one who has to do all the booking and all that annoying stuff.
Yeah.
But it means I also have all the control, So in terms of, is it different whether it's one instrument or another? I think it's just different whether it's one person or another.
Okay.
I don't know if the instrument matters as much, but you know, like, you know, it just depends on your personality and,
yeah,
and how you lead and how you lead the other musicians. And I think it takes a certain personality to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Because you have to be pretty calm and you need to exert some control, but not too much, or else people aren't going to like you and they're not going to want to play in your band.
Yeah.
So it's like finding that balance. And then you were asking, the other thing was, what's the difference between being a sideman?
Yeah, your approach.
So musically, I don't feel like there's any difference.
Okay.
Because, again, I don't think the music should necessarily mirror who's in charge.
Okay.
Because once you get on the bandstand, you're all equal members in creating whatever you're creating. So I don't think there has to be, you know, like, oh, it's a saxophone player's band, so clearly, you know, he's going to feed. I mean, if it's a good band, it's a good band.
Yeah.
But then there's all the other stuff, you know, all the intangibles, like, you know, being a sideman is nice because you don't have to do as much work. You know, when the leader's counting all the money or introducing every song or booking everything, you just get to chill out and have a beer and wait until you're told what to do.
Yeah.
So it's much more relaxing. And it can be hard to be a band leader because even when you're on stage and you're supposed to be focusing on the music and and performing, it's easy for all the other stuff to creep in. Like, you're looking at the audience, you're like, oh, there's not enough people here, so we're probably not going to make that much money. Or, you know, all of his solos, he's taking too long solos, and the set's going to be too long, so maybe we have to cut a tune. Or, like, all this garbage is going through your head.
Yeah.
When what you really want to be thinking is nothing.
Yeah.
And just listening and playing. So it can take... It takes some work to be able to quiet that stuff and just know that once you get on stage, you can't worry about all the other crap because you can't change it once you're on stage. So you're just going to play and then deal with all the business when the gig's over.
Yeah.
And as a sideman, you're not thinking about that. I mean, I know for sure if I'm in a club and there's no one there, whatever, you know, I'm going to get paid and I'm going to play the gig because that's my job. So you don't care. You're just, okay, it's fine. I'm going to play.
Yeah.
So it can be easier. You don't have to quiet all those voices because they're not there.
Okay. Well, that's, thank you. I have another, few more questions.
Okay.
For you, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
One, it's sort of just a notion that interests me. Do you ever, when you're on tour, after the show, do you have, like, jams that happen with local musicians? Because I've just heard that this is a thing that happens, you know?
Let me think. You know, I have once when I was on a festival tour.
Yeah.
Sometimes jazz festivals will have, like, a jam area. Not once, actually. It happened a couple times on that festival tour. Because jazz festivals will have a jam session that they invite all the musicians to.
Okay.
But usually, when I'm just on a regular tour, it can be tough because we're probably playing, you know, like in a city like Edmonton, for example.
Yeah.
We're playing in the club.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time the show is done, you know, people are going to bed.
Yeah.
But to be honest, it depends on the city, right? Like, I don't know how many musicians were in the audience at our show in Edmonton the other night. Like, it's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah.
But it's not that it never happens. It has happened a couple times, and it's great. It's nice to be able to play with local musicians. And, I mean, again, that's the beauty of this music, is that we could play it with anyone. So why not? Why not meet some new people? And play.
Yeah, totally.
So whenever we can and whenever it's available, we definitely check it out.
Great. Cool. And as for, I guess, back to the tour now, You're going to be playing in Fernie tonight, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
I've been intrigued by Fernie since I was in grade 12, and this, I don't know, older cool guy said that Fernie had the best powder in the world, and I thought it had a funny name. So I just want to ask you, yeah, personally, what's Fernie like? Is this your first time there? I had no idea that there was any live music there at all. I have absolutely no notion of Fernie. So I was hoping you could tell me and elaborate,
sure,
on this fantastical image that I have of the city or the town.
Look, it's a really cool ski town. Absolutely. I mean, it's funny because we just came from Banff, and so it's,
yeah,
you kind of get here and we're like, oh yeah, it's like kind of like Banff, smaller. You know, it's just like another ski town.
Yeah.
But, and to be honest, I've never gone skiing here, so I haven't skied since I was like a really, like, really young teenager. So
yeah,
I'd like to, but I haven't. But it's, yeah, it's a cool town. They have an art center here and that's where we're playing. We've played here now, I think this is my fourth or fifth time being here.
Oh wow.
To perform, yeah. And yeah, I mean, again, I can't tell you about the skiing.
Well, that's
I've
okay.
I've also heard that it's fantastic.
Yeah.
But it seems like a really cool place. I mean, the people are all really nice. Everyone we've ever encountered here is just really great people. It actually reminds me of Banff because there's lots of Aussies. Feels like there's just Australians everywhere.
Yeah.
Following us around. yeah, it's a really cool place. I highly recommend you come check it out.
All right. Thank you. And could you give us, me and everyone, all the listeners, the information for your show here in Vancouver?
Sure. We're playing on Friday night at Frankie's Jazz Club.
All right.
I don't have the address.
Oh, it's okay. I'll mention it after the interview.
Okay, great. But, yeah, we're playing there. We're playing three sets. And we'll be playing a whole bunch of all this music that we've been touring. And to be honest, it's the last gig before we record. So the music is going to be as ready as it's going to be.
That's the best one.
The people that heard us in Toronto got ripped off because they're still figuring stuff out. But
yeah,
People in Vancouver are going to hear us when we're at our peak.
Well, that's a good pitch.
Yeah, and show starts at 8 o'clock. I think we play three sets, so we're probably playing till, like, I'm guessing 11:30 or midnight or something.
Okay.
And, yeah, it's going to be super fun.
Awesome. Two more questions. Our music director here at the station, Andy Resto, told me that you run sort of some promotion company that sends us a lot of really good music that we add to the playlist. I don't know much about that, but I'd like to know a bit more. So could you please tell me about the promo work?
Sure. I run a publicity company called Orange Grove Publicity, and
okay,
I've been working with artists mostly around Toronto, but I have some from outside of Toronto as well. And I've been just doing CD release campaigns for people for the last three or four years. And there's so much amazing music in Canada. And I think sometimes we don't do ourselves, I think sometimes we do ourselves a disservice by not really making sure it gets out there. Because I've had music directors at radio stations across Canada and the U.S. be like, wow, this is such great music. You keep sending us all this great stuff. And I'm like, yeah, this is what's happening. Like, there's great musicians. Like, I'm not creating. This isn't me.
Yeah.
No, this is just the musicians in Canada. That's great. There's great stuff happening. So I felt there was a need in the scene for a good publicist to work with jazz artists and help get their stuff out. So I started doing it. I kind of had a little bit of experience, and I started doing it, like, 3 or 4 years ago, and it's been going really well, and people seem to be really happy. And I mean, for me, it's great because there's all these great musicians that deserve support and
to
be heard. So, and there's a funding model out there. So there's like, you know, if you get a grant to record an album, publicity is part of that. There's a spot where you can put money aside to publicize your album. If you make an album and if you don't publicize it, it's kind of, you know, you're kind of wasting your time. The whole point is to get it heard.
Yeah.
So if you don't get it out there and get it heard, then, you know, you don't want to make 500 CDs so you can have 500 CDs in your basement.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to get them out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you work so hard on making an album. It's such a, you know, you pour your heart and soul into it. And then if you don't, you know, get it out there and get it to into as many hands as you can, you're just kind of cheating yourself.
Yeah, fair point. Well, thank you so much. I've got one last question for you, which is a question that I like to ask a lot of people that I interview, because it's become a, well, almost a rite of passage here at the station. So this question was concocted a few years ago by one of the members here, and it's a would you rather question. So would you rather marry either a vegetable person, so this is not a person in a vegetative state, but an anthropomorphic vegetable, say like a humanoid celery, or you have vegetable of your choice, or that's one possibility, or an alien, so sort of your run-of-the-mill alien. That's the question.
Man. But that's so open-ended. This alien could be anything. I can use my imagination, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with alien. I think it'd be more interesting. Although, a vegetable person sounds really, really neat, too.
Great.
But I think I'm going with alien.
All right, that's my choice, too. well,
so many options. There's so many ways that can go. I'm intrigued.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ernesto Trevini, thank you for coming on the show and talking to us. And Ernesto Trevini and Turboprop, or just Turboprop, will be here in Vancouver on Friday night at Frankie's. So make sure to check them out. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
I got a stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing their records. For more information on their vast selection of new, used, and rare music, go to vinylrecords.ca.
Ranging from DIY bedroom pop and garage rock all the way to harsh noise and, of course, drone. Pop Drone, every Wednesday at 10 to 11:30 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
My advice to young girls would be...
All right, that was my interview with Ernesto Trevini. So Turboprop, Ernesto's group, is playing tomorrow night at Frankie's, which is located at 765 Beattie Street. So hopefully you can make it. Should be a good show. All right, I want to play a couple more songs because it is... SoCan week, which means if I play Canadian content, some artists are going to get paid. So I'm going to play a couple bands that I like quite a bit that are a bit heavier than what we listened to before. And then hopefully, if there's time, I'll get to play one last song. All right. Enjoy. This is Swim Team with Poison Ivy.
You are.
All right, that was Failing with the song Gold Palms from their album The Apple in the Pig's Mouth. Before that, we listened to Swim Team. The song was Poison Ivy off of their new album Out of the Flood. And finally, just before Tim comes in with Rocket from Russia, we've got one last song. And as I said, I'm going to keep you guys on your toes. Andy recommended a children's album to me to play, and apparently it has been charting in heavy rotation on radio in Belgium and Holland. So we're going to close out the show with the song Grandpa's Lap by Robert Burton Hubley with Brad Steckel, a Vancouver-based children's album. The album is called The Sleepy Time King, and it's dedicated to Robert Hubel's grandpa. All right, enjoy. Rock from Russia is up next. There we go. Thanks for listening.
One little kid on grandpa's lap, cuddling up as he takes his nap. Gramps just smiles when he feels a tap. And now there's two little kids on Grandpa's lap. Two little kids on Grandpa's lap, pulling his mustache, beard, and cap. Heard a little voice, had to make a gap. Now there's three little kids on Grandpa's lap. Well, listen up, kids, it's actual fact. There's always room for one more on Grandpa's lap. Three little kids on Grandpa's lap, playing and talking about this and that. Heard a little noise, I know it's not the cat. Now there's four little kids on Grandpa's lap. Listen up, kids, it's an actual fact. There's always room for one more on Grandpa's lap. Grandpa's lap. Gramps just loves it right where he's at. Think that my lap might need another flap, because there's five little kids on Grandpa's lap. Listen up, kids, here's an actual fact. There's always room for one more on Grandpa's lap. And listen up, kids, here's the very best part. There's always room for one more in Grandpa's heart. Always room for one more in Grandpa's heart. Always room for one more on Grandpa's lap.
Little Jimmy wouldn't listen.